Hi, I'm Bill Coates.
And I'm Lacey Paxton, and together we are your hosts of Garage to Main Street.
Good morning, Lacey. How's everything going with you?
Oh, you know, it's Friday.
It is Friday.
We are recording this on a Friday morning, so we have survived another week. How about you?
Of the pandemic?
Of the pandemic, week 722 of the pandemic.
I am barely surviving. Me and my wife have decided to go on a juice cleanse, so I am starving. Lack of better so I don't know if it's actually good for me or not, but we've tried it. I'm not a fan, and a hamburger sounds really good. It doesn't even have to be a good hamburger, like a cheap one. Yeah, I'll do McDonald's. A Big Mac sounds amazing. I want food.
No.
I want real food.
I will probably never do a juice cleanse. It's just not something that is appealing to me.
Yeah, it's probably on that never again list for me.
You know, I have a never again from this week. We drove from Kerrville, Texas to Mississippi and back with two kids.
How many hours?
Pretty much 15 each way. So 30 hours in a vehicle. We did rent a minivan, which was our only saving grace. Now, I have two kids.
Yep.
Never. You know, you don't know what you don't know. Okay. I did not know what I was missing out on. Had no idea how great a minivan would be. I have now sent my husband like five or six different minivans that I think he should buy me, and he is holding true to the it's a no. And I am begging for a minivan.
Wow. Like, you couldn't even get like a 15 passenger van that's like jacked up on big tires that could appease your husband potentially?
Bill, I would wreck that thing. This is why I can't get a Suburban. I can't drive a bus. Okay. Like, I just can't. And let me just say, like, if you are a parent and you are very anti-minivan, go rent one. We had a Chrysler Pacifica. Hey, if you want to like, you know, throw us some money for this.
Sponsor us.
Let me know, because I'm super all about your product. But the doors slide open, so there's no like risk of kids door dinging the car next to you. Our littlest, who's two, was able to get up into the vehicle and into her own seat by herself without mama's help. Our big one had the whole back seat to herself, which was fabulous. So we did not hear from our 14-year-old for, you know, 15 hours at a time, which is quasi awesome and quasi like, hey, are you good back there? Like, you're still alive, right?
We didn't leave you at the last truck stop.
Pretty much. Just making sure she's there, because again, this drive was really long. So I am now a huge proponent of said minivan. I think everybody should own one. It's like, it's fabulous. So
nice.
But never do I want to drive to Mississippi again.
Fly.
Okay, here's the thing though. But in coronavirus, do you really want to get on an airplane?
You know, I've heard the best way to travel on an airplane is private jet. And in coronavirus time, commercial is pretty dang close to private from what I understand.
Well,
there's nobody on it. You get the whole row to yourself. It sounds glorious to me. You're not sitting in somebody else's lap.
I mean, well, you are leggier than I am. For those who don't know, Bill's super tall. I am only 5 feet tall. So I can sit with anybody on an airplane, and it doesn't faze me at all. So
see, I've got two issues. One is obviously I've got long legs, so the person in front of me is practically in my lap. And then the next issue is I always tend to get the middle seat, and the two people on either side of me happen to always be quite large. And so it gets tight, and it's not comfortable, and it's always a long flight, and it's not my favorite. And I'm ready for the day when I have the finances to not have to deal with that.
Well, remember in May. So for those of you who don't know, coronavirus killed everything this year, as far as like on our calendar. We were supposed to go to a big, it's like, this is how I tell people, it's like Comic-Con for shopping centers in Las Vegas. It's called ICSC. And it was also on the same day as our oldest recital. and I was trying to figure out how I was going to stay very as long as I could at her recital and also get to the airport and meet my cohorts and jump on this airplane and go away to Las Vegas. And so one of our friends in Kerrville had said, well, hey, I'll just pick you up in Fredericksburg and I'll fly you into the airport. No big deal. You'll be there in like 15 minutes. So I will say private is really the way to go if you can. I'm not trying to be bougie, as the kids say, but it is a lot nicer than commercial. So get there, Bill.
Absolutely.
Hire Bill so he can become bougie.
That's right. So what are we talking about today, Lacey?
Today we are talking about the difference in what is considered first generation and second generation space in shopping centers.
Awesome.
And why, the goods of each, the bads of each, things you should think about, things that you don't think about before you're like knee deep in it. And we're gonna give you a lot of information, but it's good information.
So, that's good information.
Yeah.
Awesome. So what is first generation space? What is second generation space? What does that mean, Lacey?
So first generation space is going to be brand new construction. Nobody has ever used the space, never has occupied the space for retail use or business use. It's never been anything. So most of the time it is going to be very cold. It's going to be very dark and very blank. Yes, Shelly. We call that most of the time you'll receive a first generation space as a cold, dark shell. That's you're going to have no electrical, no plumbing, no HVAC, which if you live in Texas, is kind of a must. There's going to be no plumbing. There's going to be no walls. Like, it's just blank space, which you have a blank canvas. And second generation space is going to be a space that has been occupied by a user prior to you who has probably taken it from this cold dark shell that I just mentioned and made it into some sort of usable space, which means you probably have HVAC. You will hopefully have plumbing, so like restrooms, water fountain, and you will have some walls and electrical in place, maybe even some flooring. So those are kind of the two different types of space. So what makes first generation space so appealing, Bill?
So the exciting part about first generation space is you're the first user. It's a blank canvas. You really can come in and configure the space any way you want it. You're also usually in first generation space in a great part of town. It is usually it is in a brand new shopping center. So you get the pizzazz of, hey, this is a brand new shopping center. I'm a brand new concept in a very nice area of town. It honestly usually gives, it really elevates your concept to that next level because you've made the space yours and you've been able to put what you want into the space. You've been able to configure it for your needs and you've been able to show your clients, hey, or the people that are shopping, your customers, that, hey, we are, a class A servicer of whatever we provide, restaurant, whatever. And it also shows that you've got, you're in a newer, nicer center. So yeah. It puts you in a little bit better position compared to some of your competitors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes these new shopping centers might not have as high of a traffic count as some of your old shopping centers, but it's where the traffic is moving to. So they predict like, okay, everything's going to be out here. Pretty much if you see a new Target, expect there to be lots of growth around it right after. And there'll be a lot of shopping centers coming up and everybody will want to call it home. So obviously with every pro,
there's a con.
So whenever you look at these first generation spaces, yeah, you get to make it whatever you want, but that always comes at a price tag.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad you brought that up, Lacey. So there are some downsides to it. One, you're typically signing 5, maybe a 10-year lease. You've now put in a couple hundred thousand into building the space and creating it the way you want it. But you don't get to take it. You can't pull that plumbing out. There's literally no value in plumbing after it's already installed.
Right.
Unless it breaks, and then you're like, oh no, and you don't want that. Same thing with your lights, your fixtures. Sheetrock is a commodity, but once it's put into a building, there's no value in it.
Well, and also most leases will block you from taking out your lighting and your wall coverings and things like that.
Right. And because it goes from, a commodity to a fixture. And so you can't take it with you. That's one of the downsides. Usually first generation space is a little bit more expensive from rents, from a rent perspective. So you're already starting to pay a premium. And then on top of that, you've got to pay an additional premium to build out your space. And then there are things that you don't necessarily think about. So if you're, say, a shoe store and you just really need four walls, a front door, a sign, and maybe a bathroom. Now, on top of that, you also have to put in your AC and your lights and stuff like that. And it starts to add up. I mean, we replaced our AC in our house recently, which is a different story for a different day, but we replaced it and it was a little over $6,000.
And it's only for a house.
And that was for half of my upstairs house, because I've got two units. So you're talking about, a $3,000, and my house, by the way, is not that big.
You're not that bougie.
We are not that fancy. So you talk about, a 3,000 square foot commercial retail space, you're probably looking at double, potentially even triple that.
Right. And plus, most of the time you have to actually physically get the unit on top of the roof, which means a crane, which cranes aren't cheap, guys.
No.
It's just not cheap. It's not a cheap subcontractor to hire.
And depending on the center, you may actually have to put in your own sprinkler system as well. A lot of the new ones now already kind of come with that pre-installed, but even if they come pre-installed, you're still going to have to do the drops. It's expensive all around.
Yes. And it is expensive. And, that's kind of one of those blessings of a second generation space, is that somebody has already done some of this stuff for you. So we kind of just touched on what makes a first generation space appealing. Told you what doesn't make it appealing. So the things that make a second generation space appealing are pretty much the things that made a first generation space not appealing, right? And I know that sounds confusing. But somebody already put in your plumbing, somebody already put in their HVAC, somebody already put in your electrical, somebody already put some walls up. They might not be the ideal placement of walls. Like if you have a back room and you're like, man, this back room's too big. Okay, so you can pay to move a wall that is way less costly than putting in all of the walls and all of the plumbing and all of the HVAC, or you leave the wall where it is and you make it work. You work with what is in the space.
And I'm glad you brought up walls. In first generation space, a lot of times you're having to put the sheetrock up on the perimeter of your space.
Absolutely.
So you're really doing pretty much everything. In a second generation space, that stuff is usually there.
Yeah.
The challenge is finding a good second generation space for you, because you may go, hey, I have a pizza concept and I want to be at the corner of Main and Main, and there's only one shopping center with one second generation space in it, and it may have used to been a dentist office, which you can use any of that stuff, and you've got to start from scratch.
But so, even with starting from scratch, you still have some of the good infrastructure, I guess, for lack of a better word, already there. HVAC units, plumbing, electrical is at least in the walls.
You do. And where I was going with it is, it may, some of that stuff, like your AC unit, may be an older unit and it may not work. And so that's why it's really important to get a broker involved, like Lacey or myself, so that we can show you, hey, this second generation space is actually going to cost you more than a potential first generation space right down the street.
Right.
So that's really where having a expert broker that has, signed a ton of leases and done this sort of thing before can help guide you and go, hey, this space is great, but the one across the street, yes, it costs a little bit more to finish out, but you're not having to gut the whole thing. I had a client that was looking at a space, just like that. It was a dentist space and they're a gym. And so we sat down with their contractor, looked at the space, and the contractor goes, you know, really 95% of this is not usable. I'm going to have to pull out the ceiling. I'm going to have to pull out all the flooring. I'm going to have to pull out all the walls, plumbing, electrical. And by the time it was all said and done, we determined that it was cheaper to go down the road to a first generation space. Because it was a blank canvas and they were a gym and all they really needed to do was slap some paint on the walls, maybe put some flooring down and AC and they're done.
And some restrooms.
And some restrooms, shower, you know, stuff like that.
Little things.
But ultimately their cost went from $115,000 down to $85,000.
Right. And so you're correct. It really does depend on your use. But if you are a hair salon and you are, or if you're a hairstylist and you decided, okay, it is time, I'm ready to open my own hair salon. If you can find a second generation hair salon, it's going to cost you less money regardless of how you cut, how you slice and dice it than building your own hair salon. Like 90, and I'd pretty much bet the farm on it. Like 99.99999% of the time, it would be more beneficial for you to what we call backfill a vacant hair salon than start from a blank canvas.
And a lot of time, and that's why it's important to get a broker involved, yes, right? Because a lot of times, the brokers are aware of what the space used to be and can get you in. And you're exactly right. It makes a lot of sense to go backfill something. So even if it may not be at the corner of Maine, it could be just down the road and be a second generation hair salon and be the perfect spot for you. Because even though it's not exactly where you want it, it's pretty close in proximity. Your customers will still drive, you know, the extra
2 minutes
to come get to you, and you've saved $100,000 right off the top.
Which, if you know anything about being in business for yourself, saving yourself the money on the front end is going to allow you to potentially be a more lucrative business over the long haul, because walking into opening a place with $100,000 in debt, that puts like a lot of pressure on a person, a lot of pressure. So also people like a hair salon are a destination location. My hairdresser could move to the end of the earth and I will go to her. I actually drive 4 hours and 15 minutes to my hairdresser from my home.
Wow.
Because she is still in Lubbock and I am in Kerrville, and I have a whole lot of hair on my head. Our oldest has a ton of hair on her head. And the idea of a really bad haircut is like what nightmares are made of. So I am more than happy to drive the time to get to her. Now, I know everybody's not going to drive 4 hours to get to their hairdresser, but if you move from where you're renting a booth into your own salon in the same vicinity, I bet they're going to follow you to the ends of the earth.
And I'm really glad that you brought up hairdressers, because the first lease I ever signed was with a hairdresser. They were in a salon suite, which if you guys don't know is just a bunch of kind of small rooms where they can, you know, service people one-on-one, cut their hair one-on-one, and she was paying I think about $1,500 a month, which is a lot less than what you'd pay for your own commercial space. For a similar sized, or the smallest really sized commercial space, you're probably looking closer to $3,000 a month.
That's all in. That's
going to be your taxes, your CAM.
Utilities.
Does not include utilities.
But no, I'm saying including, like around $3,000 a month.
Right.
Like if you, that'd be your overhead expense, right?
It'd probably be $3,500 if you included utilities, but just for base rent. And so we were looking for space, and finally I found one space for her that was probably 15 or 20 minutes away, and said it was a second generation salon, had all the bones that she needed. And I said, look, these are your two options. You can either move into the second generation salon, which is I think closer to $2,000 a month, or you need to stay where you're at. Because these are the only two, this is the most affordable option as close to where you want to be as possible. And finally, she looked at it and goes, you know what, you're right. You know, if I want to get out of this space, the new space you're showing me isn't perfect. It's not the most ideal, but my customers will travel to me. And she's been very successful because of it.
Absolutely. So pretty much what we're saying is there's good and bad in both. One of the things with a new build that I didn't, we didn't touch on yet, you sign a lease and pretty much there might be a building being built. It might be in pre-construction. It might be halfway built. And they're going to give you an estimated delivery date. It's kind of a crapshoot, you know, because what if we have like 3 weeks of rain? You know what? That date is probably not going to hit if that building wasn't dried in. So you're kind of have a moving target of when you're even going to get your space, which is kind of hard for launching a business because you have an ideal open date. Like if you were a toy store, you'd totally want to be open by Thanksgiving.
Right.
And to be open by Thanksgiving, you probably need to have your space by July or August at the latest. And if they said, yeah, we're going to deliver July 1, it's really easy for July 1 to become September 1. And then you're behind and there's frustrations and you're not going to make the revenue that you wanted in that fourth quarter. And then you're going to really, really, you know, be frustrated with your landlord, with the developer, whatever. So that's kind of one of those challenges of first generation space, but also you might be the only one there for a while.
Yeah.
Some people sign leases way out, because they know that they would rather be cautious on that open date and give that developer all the time in the world to get that shopping center up and moving before they commit to being open. And they'll like drag their lease out. So they'll have a lease start date of way further out just to keep it in check with their master plan.
And one of the other things that we also haven't touched on on a new construction is project management. So,
oh yeah.
So when you take over a second gen space, a lot of times you're not really moving walls. You may have to have an AC guy come check the unit, but there's not a whole lot that necessarily needs to be done. A lot of times you can just come in, repaint the walls and go, and that just doesn't really take
lipstick.
A permit. Right. When you're doing a whole new project, not only do you have to run your business at your current location, but now you've got to manage architects, engineers, and contractors. And if you're not on top of contractors, they will take their sweet time.
Hey, Bill, what do you do whenever you are a tenant and you want to open a store?
You would reach out to Bill and Chad. Bill and Chad are me.
Me.
Call me. We'll help you figure it out. We're in the process of putting together a development company to help one of our institutional clients develop a couple of projects. And we can help you develop your project as well if that's in a shopping center, or we can do ground up developments for you.
So, absolutely.
Hiring somebody to help manage that is honestly really important to make sure that you hit your open dates, because 100%. Time is money. And if you're not open on time, you're losing money.
Yeah. It's like a toy store not open by Thanksgiving. Like you're pretty much missing out on the biggest part of your year. I'm excited for Bill and Chad. I'm hoping Bill and Chad let me come play on the project management side, because that's part of my past and I loved it. Our guys, I used to be on the crew, they would call me 5 feet of fury. They're like, uh-oh, here comes 5 feet of fury, because I would come and stomp my feet and they're like, Lacey, and I'm like, what else am I gonna do? I'm tiny. So I'm gonna stomp my feet and you're gonna see that I'm incredibly frustrated and I mean business. And then I'd come back hours later and everything would be done. It was a great, great working relationship with our crews. But having somebody in your corner to advocate for you and kind of keep you at an arm's distance is very beneficial, because you get to be the good guy. Bill, Chad, myself, we get to be the bad guy. We get to throw the punches on your behalf and really push people to hit those deadlines, which is important.
Yeah.
It's important. And the other thing is with new construction, there's a little piece called TI, which is tenant improvement allowance, where a landlord knows he's giving you a space with nothing. He's giving you a blank canvas. So they will give you some money towards your finish out.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they know that you're going to leave stuff there. Like, for instance,
you're not going to take your toilet.
You're not going to take that HVAC. And so they contribute to it. And I wanted to touch on one of the deals that I've done in the past. Absolutely. I was working with a restaurant on a first generation space. And because the building, when we were negotiating the lease, had not come out of the ground yet, we were able to negotiate a couple of different things into the lease that really helped lower the cost, the initial cost for the tenant. Now, these clients and I were able to work out an extremely good deal with this landlord. And I would not say that you should bank on this, and this is not usual, not normal, but we were able to negotiate to have the landlord put in a grease trap before the building came out of the ground.
So much easier pre-construction.
Exactly. And that's one of the benefits of pre-construction is you're not having to tear up a parking lot to put this thing in.
And we were able to tear a parking lot.
Right. And we were able to negotiate that on behalf of the tenant along with additional tenant improvement allowance. And I'll say we actually were able to negotiate the tenant to put their cooler outside for no additional charge.
Oh, wow.
And that gave them an extra, 800 square feet of space that they don't have to pay rent on regularly. So
yeah,
it turned out to be a huge win-win for both because we were able to get in on the ground floor and adjust the architectural drawings before the building came out of the ground. Now, had that building been built and not specifically designed for those two purposes, we would have had to have stored the coolers inside, which is very normal, and they would be paying rent on them. We would also probably have to tear up a bunch of asphalt and concrete and hire some plumbers to put in a backhoe and dig out a hole so that we could put the grease trap in.
And then you'd have to fill that hole back in and pay to fix their parking lot. And some landlords in my world of working would then make you responsible for that portion that had been taken out and repoured because you hired somebody to do it. And so you would have to warranty it for 2 years or something. So if it did get, a pothole in it, you're responsible for fixing it because your guys tore it out, your guys put it back and
so
did the damage.
And so that's one of the benefits to having a first generation space is, especially if you can get in before the building comes out of the ground, you can negotiate some certain things. I know some of the other deals we've worked on is they've been able to add drive-throughs. They've been able to add additional patio space depending and kind of tailor the building to suit the tenant's needs. Whereas after it's built, they can still do that. It's just going to cost you, the tenant, a lot more money.
Right. And sometimes, in my experience back in good old West Texas, we worked with Potbelly, one of their franchisees, and they wanted a patio. They wanted a enclosure for their dumpster, and they wanted a drive-through. All of those things take away from the parking in a shopping center. Mm-hmm. And we had to do a bit of work to make sure that we had enough parking for the rest of this, 40,000 square foot shopping center. Because once you take out three spots for a patio, and then you have a stack lane for a drive through, and then an enclosure for dumpsters, which is three or four parking spaces, you've really cut down what you're working with. And so anytime that you can have your tenant give all of that information ahead of the game, landlords are very much more willing to work with them. Because if you came to a landlord after it's all built and say, hey, I want all of this stuff, they're going to say, sorry, I can't do it and meet everything that the city is making me do, because you have landscape requirements, parking requirements, all of those things that you have to take into consideration.
From a development standpoint, right. It's a lot easier for the landlord to build in that flexibility before it's built versus tearing everything out, because then it just becomes cost prohibitive for them.
Yeah.
That's, we talked in previous episodes about, first time tenants looking for, 1,000 square feet or less. And the reason that landlords don't build those spaces out is because it becomes cost prohibitive. They're putting a bunch of money in to help, facilitate the TI dollars to help facilitate your AC and your plumbing and stuff like that, but they're not able to rent out the space or get their return quickly enough for it to make sense for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything in life, I always say this, has to make dollars and cents. Mm-hmm. like that play on words. Maybe Dave Ramsey should pick that one up because it's super fun. So we really like first generation space, it sounds like. We are not telling you that first generation space is the way to go all the time. There are many times that I will look at second generation space for a client that has maybe a mom and pop, a bakery. If I have a, like this is really true, there was a vacant Quiznos in a town that I used to represent in. It made a great bakery because the bakery had to have a grease trap. They don't produce a lot of grease, but that city maintained the standard that everybody needed a grease trap. So that 1500 square foot space, it was a vacant Quiznos, was a perfect spot to backfill. It had a counter at the front. It had a wall dividing the kitchen from the front and a grease trap. It was very cost effective for her to go into that space. She did some paint, she did some flooring, and she opened her doors. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
And you're exactly right. I think the key things to remember are, what is your concept? Are there spaces that you can backfill that make sense for your concept? What kind of flexibility do you have? So for instance, if you are a Quiznos, we'll just say franchisee, Quiznos is very, it has to look a certain way. It's got to be the certain layout. Mm-hmm. And for franchisees, a lot of times it makes more sense to go into first generation space because they're going to get the whole thing anyways and build it out their way.
Right.
If it's your concept and you've got some flexibility and it's somewhat even close, like your bakery, it may make more sense to go look at second generation space first. And if there's not a second generation space that makes sense for you in the certain area, then expand your search into first generation space.
Right. But I will always say, and I think that Bill and I are going to get tired of us saying this, they're like a broken record. Engage a broker. If you are in Wisconsin, engage a broker that knows Wisconsin. If you don't know a broker, call Bill, call myself. We will go through our network of people that we work with and we will find the best one for you because they are going to know, hey, I remember seeing a flyer on a Quiznos that went out. That could be a great spot for you as a bakery, or a bakery that went out or whatever. We as brokers do a really good job of communicating within our network of cohorts to make sure that we are providing that information to one another to better serve our landlord clients and to get those spaces backfilled as quickly as possible. So engage a broker. Always engage a broker. Anytime you have a question, engage a broker. They might not be the right broker, and a great broker will tell you, I'm not the right person for this, but I'm going to reach out to this person, and we're going to connect with you to see who works best for your use. I don't do warehouse space. That's not something that I do, but you know, we have a guy in our office, his name is Tyler, and he is like the guru on it. We would probably bring him in and say, hey, come alongside us. Let's get you with this client. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Get your new space. So that's always going to be my suggestion. Always, always, always. What are some pro tips?
Pro tips. First, find a broker. You can email us at garagetomainstreet@gmail.com and we can give you suggestions. Second, interview the broker. Ask them what their last few deals were, what they do primarily, what their knowledge base is. If they say, if you're a restaurateur and you're looking for a second generation restaurant space and the guy only does industrial, he's probably not your guy, in all honesty. Now, if you own a lawn care company and you're looking for space and you need, and you go to a retail broker like Bill or Lacey, we're probably going to recommend you find somebody that can help you find a retail space that makes
Tyler
sense for you.
Tyler with Foresight Commercial Real Estate out of San Antonio.
Exactly. Exactly. So find an expert that can help guide you to the right direction. After you found that expert, communicate with them as to what your needs are. Be open and honest. If you say, hey, my budget is $1,000 and it's probably not going to work out very well because that's, and your real budget is 3,000. It's probably not going to work out well because you're not being open and transparent with your broker. When you sign your brokerage agreement with your, with Bill or Lacey, your representation, they have your back. They are in your court. So they may, you may say, hey, my budget is $10,000 or my budget is $10,000 a month. And if it's $10,000 a month, we can find something and we'll try and get you the best deal on that. But if your budget's, or, but if what you can actually pay is $20,000 a month, your problem, your needs probably aren't going to be met.
Right.
It's like if you're buying a house, if you, you say, well, I've got a $250,000 budget, but your budget's really $1 million, you're not going to be impressed with a $250,000 house.
Right.
Same thing with commercial real estate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always say it's like attorney client privileges. We are not attorneys, by the way, but whatever you tell your attorney is like privy, you're, you know, that's like confidential. Anything you tell us as your broker, as your representation, once we're in that agreement, we're not going to go and blab it because we want to get you the best deal. We like wheeling and dealing and getting you the best deal. It's kind of a game sometimes. I mean, it's not a game, but it's like gambling a little bit. Like, all right.
It's really, really fun. And we do, and we do it if, even if we don't personally benefit. On one of the deals I recently have worked on, we were able to negotiate on a land purchase, a $300,000 reduction in price. And yes, I make a commission based off of the total purchase price. Yes, I represent the seller. And so even though that cut my commission down, I was very, very happy to do it because I want the best deal possible for my client. And I'm willing to fight tooth and nail to do it, even if it means I make less money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So one, engage a broker. Two, you know what my second one is? Before you sign anything, get a contractor or get a development specialist, get somebody who does that type of work, get a project manager to come and look at it. If your project manager comes and does not bring a plumber and an electrician and a HVAC guy, he's probably not very good at his job because they are coordinating, you know, they are going to be, you know, the ringleader here. And so they're going to bring in everybody who knows everything about everything. Get somebody, even if it's second generation space, find someone who can bring everybody in and make sure that everything is good. Make sure that you don't have a huge electrical fiasco when you get your power turned on and nothing works. Because, oh my gosh, what a surprise that would be.
And that happens.
And it does. It happens all the time. So the landlord might not know that there's an electrical issue because the tenant had the power in their name. They turned the power off and the space was in good condition. So he didn't turn it back on to, you know, clean it or anything. So that would be my second pro tip.
Yeah, I agree. And some of that can be negotiated in the lease as well. A lot of times in leases for second generation space that I've signed, I will put in a provision or have the attorney put in a provision. We'll do it in the LOI, but saying that, hey, for instance, the HVAC is going to be
warranted
for X amount of time or at least given to the tenant in good working condition. Mm-hmm. And that means that, hey, well, the moment you walk in the building and turn the power on, you should have cold air blowing. And if not, the landlord will make sure that the cold air is blowing. So
amen.
It's stuff like that that professional real estate brokers like Lacey and myself can help you make sure that you're covered and reduce your overall business risk. And there's so much risk in opening a new location that if we can help you reduce that a little bit through our through some of the experiences that we've had, we're very, very happy to do that for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah. So I think that those are two really good pro tips for everybody. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see, hear stories about people who've listened to Garage to Main Street that have went out and engaged a broker and started a actual, you know, brick and mortar location. That's a term that we use a lot because you can do a lot on the internet these days, but having that brick and mortar presence, is just kind of a game changer for everybody. So Bill, what are you going to do in week 1021 of quarantine?
Well, me and my wife are going to start a bathroom remodel. We're not taking any of Lacey or Bill's advice and having contractors come in and look at plumbing
but,
and stuff.
But here's the deal. Your wife is, that's, this is what she does.
She's
a project manager.
She is a project manager.
So you married good.
I did.
You married good.
Yeah. So we've got that going for us, but I'm a little nervous. I'm what do the kids say? Bougie. And I do not want to be inconvenienced by having a half demolished bathroom for 3 weeks. Hopefully this project moves very quickly and painlessly.
Hopefully Bill gets a cheeseburger before they start.
Yes. Yeah. We were talking about, you know, our food plan for next week, you know, we're going to the grocery store and whatnot. And she was like, yeah, we'll just have like, you know, some leftovers for breakfast. We'll have a couple of eggs for breakfast. And I was like, no, I need more food before I go lift heavy stuff. So
that's so funny. I will also, just for transparency purpose, let everyone know my 14-year-old is in the room. She's currently being a 14-year-old and not paying a bit of attention to what we're doing today. But when Bill said that he was going to get a cheeseburger while he's on this fast, she was like, no, drink more water. She is a better human being than I am. Because yeah. I'm like, dude, just go get a steak. Go get some cheesecake.
I haven't decided 100% that's what's going to happen, but it's probably 95%. And by the time this episode airs, we'll have been at least 2 weeks out from this fast. And my wife hopefully will be less mad at me that I potentially have cheated.
Cheated on your, well, you were doing all this wonderful stuff this weekend, breaking up tile, laying tile, all the fun things. I'm going to be at home hanging out with my fam. My mother-in-law is coming for one night tomorrow, which is always awesome because she gets to hang out with the kiddos and I can go read a book on the patio. And I'm looking forward to just not driving 30 hours this weekend. Awesome. It's going to be fantastic. I will say that the wedding we went to was beautiful and that apparently once you take Texans to Mississippi, there was a handful of us there. Those are also the only people that dance that really cut a rug at this wedding. So apparently the Texans have all the moves. So we are going to have a much more low-key weekend and I'm excited about it.
That's awesome. Anything else before we go?
No, but stay tuned because we have some really cool guests on the horizon. I know some of these people just would really like to get through the pandemic to where we feel much more comfortable being face-to-face before they come on, but we've got some cool stuff on the horizon. Don't forget to like us, share us, comment.
Give us 5 stars.
Tell all your friends to listen to us, and we appreciate it, and we will see you next time.